Join RNIB Connect and become part of a wider and stronger community led by blind and partially sighted people. Membership is free, and it's the best way to keep in touch with things that are of interest and help to you. You'll receive Connect magazine, our membership publication, in your chosen format, as well as having the chance to be amongst thousands of like-minded, blind and partially sighted people, friends, families and supporters. You'll also be able to take part in and organise social activities in your area, campaign for change and improve the lives of people with little or no sight, and get help from our dedicated RNIB Connect support team. It couldn't be easier to join RNIB Connect. Simply complete the online form at rnib.org.uk or join over the phone by calling 0303 1234 555.
RNIB, supporting people with sight loss.
The RNIB newsagent service, which delivers the latest news, magazines and stories in a range of accessible formats to people with sight loss, is now free for under 16s. Reading can make the world of difference, and it's vital that all blind and partially sighted children can access the same content as their sighted peers in a fun and creative way. Current titles in the RNIB newsagent service include BBC Horrible Histories, First News, Aquila, National Geographic and RNIB Blast Off. Formats include audio CD or USB, email or Braille. To register for RNIB newsagent, please call our helpline on 0303 123 9999 or email us at helpline@rnib.org.uk.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Weekly Connect. This is the programme where you get the chance to talk about the issues that matter to you as a blind or partially sighted person. I'm Stephen Scott, and this week on the show, we ask the question, when do you think you should disclose your sight loss, if at all? Well, we hear from young people in Wales on that topic who share their views. Also, do you think you'd be able to become a qualified lawyer just because you fancied it? Well, add into the mix that you're completely blind. Blind man Kevin Greening shares his experience there. And our Society of the Week this week focuses on one of the most common causes of sight loss in this country, macular degeneration, and we find out what they are doing to help people with the condition. That's all coming up. But we start off with more of your comments this week, this time from your experiences at the recent RNIB Connect Northeast event at Windermere Manor. Let's hear what Mike, Alison and Alex had to say about the weekend.
My name's Mick Riley from Middlesbrough. My thoughts on the weekend are that I was quite reluctant to come. I don't usually join in a weekend away like this, but I've got to say I'm thoroughly surprised. I've enjoyed it far better than I anticipated. I think it's been really well organised, and the fact that it's organised by Peter, by blind and partially sighted person, is to his credit, and I will definitely be here again next year if it's on.
Hello, my name's Alison Murray. I'm from Morpeth, and I'm here at Windermere Manor Hotel for a weekend away with the RNIB Northeast Connect. I've had a fabulous time. Love the karaoke. I would never thought I would have got up to sing with a group, but it was great. The whole weekend's been really good so far.
It's Alex Mackey from Durham, and I am from... Well, I really, really liked this weekend. I liked the company. I thought the company really made it. I really liked the fact that Ellie Southwood was able to come and answer questions, because I felt that it was good for aiding people in understanding what was going on. And I felt, despite the snow, it showed that we were all willing to pull together and get there. However, I have to say, the decor has not changed since I was 14, and I don't like that.
Well, you can't please everyone, can you? Thanks to Mike, Alison and Alex for being frank and sharing your views and getting in touch. Now, when do you think you should disclose your sight loss, or should you at all? It's a difficult decision to make for us, but our reporter Lynn Morgan has been hearing the thoughts of these young people in Wales. Here's what they had to say.
RNIB Cymru's Future Insight project and UCAN Productions asked visually impaired young people how they feel about disclosing their sight loss, but began by asking about their conditions.
Oh gosh, there's many.
Aniridia, nystagmus, cataracts and photophobia.
Nystagmus, photophobia and achromatopsia.
Current optic neuritis.
I have congenital cataracts.
Septo-optic dysplasia.
I have Stargardt's disease, which is a juvenile form of macular degeneration.
I have optic nerve hyperplasia with nystagmus.
No, I don't feel comfortable disclosing my sight loss.
Yeah, like, the fact that you might have to disclose the fact that you can't see to someone can be really scary, it can make you feel really anxious, but it's actually got to the point where I don't care.
I ain't gonna bring it up until they do, really. If I don't need to go round, like, holding up a sign saying that I got bad eyes.
So, like, I'm not partially sighted, I'm not visually impaired, I'm not blind. Like, the closest thing that I can use is I can't see very well, and I don't feel like that's quite got enough gravitas.
I've spent the last 4 years of my life living in blind institutes where if you have full sight, that's a novelty, right?
If they got a problem with that, it's their problem.
I find it quite hard to disclose kind of any disability.
Everyone is going to react in the way that they react.
Yeah.
Or it's the blind person, or it's the person who had spinal surgery, or whatever.
That's people's reaction to it, and I don't think
that's them. That's nothing to do with you.
I ain't going to be offended if someone asks.
Yeah, same. Like, I'm not going to be offended if people ask questions about it. I like if people do ask questions.
Really, in recent years, haven't had to disclose my sight loss to anybody. It's been assumed that I am visually impaired, and that's been catered for.
Yeah, I don't like to tell people because I don't want anyone to treat me differently than they are being treated.
But so if you give it like a month or so, see how it goes.
If it comes up in a conversation, then I'll tell somebody about it. But because you can't really tell with me anyway, I don't really say anything.
I don't want to be that, you know, known as the blind student.
Oh, you're lying. And you're like, no, I'm not lying.
And as somebody who was bullied for being visually impaired in all of her mainstream experience, you know, I've actually got to the point now that as a 19-year-old, I'm scared of people knowing.
I normally don't really tell people the severity of my eye condition.
And that's an obstacle that I will overcome in time, because I will have to. You know, as somebody who wants to go to uni and, you know, can't live in a little blind bubble for the rest of my life.
I don't think all of my friends know, because I'd rather not tell them.
And then when I walk into something, I'm just like, oh, clumsy.
What? Seriously? I don't believe you. And you're like, I really am.
I think between visually impaired young people, there's that kind of stigma that it's hard to get jobs when you're young and VI.
Like in work, and recently, they only now found out that I was visually impaired.
I feel like that's a thing.
Obviously, the managers needed to know, so I told them, but then people in work didn't know, but I had to ask for help the other day, so then they had to find out.
I'm sure it's any disability, not just visual impairment. People start worrying and they get tentative and they don't know what to do. And it's our job as people with a disability to educate them.
You might lose opportunities because you're visually impaired, or miss out on things because you're visually impaired, but you also only get opportunities because you are visually impaired.
It shouldn't affect you in job situations.
Because some of the best things that have happened to me have been because I'm visually impaired.
I'm different to other people anyway, because I just like different things to other people that no one would like. That's another thing that makes me different.
But if you do find that you're being discriminated against because of your visual impairment, there are people out there to help you, and let them help you and sort it out.
Did you just see that? And I'm just like, see what, Mum? Thanks for that.
My whole life is surrounded with visual impairment and sight loss, and, you know, campaigning for that and trying to make it better and trying to deal with it myself.
My mum forgets, my sister forgets sometimes. Sometimes my sister makes silly little comments. You're like, you can't just say that because you're my sister, though. But it's all good.
At home and in social situations, like, I just realise how much I don't talk about it and how much it's not a thing.
If somebody, be them friend, family, boyfriend or girlfriend, truly love you, no matter what your sight may be, they still will.
It's not your visual impairment people will base your friendship on. It's you.
I think it's made us closer. I mean, made me and my friends closer, because you're just like, you realise that they are actually really good friends.
People are what's important and not, you know, what your problem is.
Yeah, whatever. Like, that's cool.
Members of UCAN Productions and RNIB Cymru Future Insight Project on disclosing their sight loss.
Lynn Morgan there, who has put together some of the views of young people from Wales on disclosing their sight loss. Now, Alan Russell joins us to talk sci-fi.
Even if you're not a big fan of science or engineering, chances are you will have heard of the Large Hadron Collider at CERN in Switzerland. It's all about finding the building blocks of our universe and much, much more. Well, there is an exhibition which tours to give people a better understanding of the collider, of its work, and the science around our molecular build-up in general. But how accessible is it? Joining me to talk a little bit more about this, we have with us Marika Nivan and Chris Edmonds. Marika, thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit more about your job.
I am a science communicator, so that means that I think of lots of ways to bring science to life.
So the idea is to get people more interested in science. What about the exhibition itself and the ideas around accessibility?
So part of my role at the Museum of Science and Industry was to do the live events programme that accompanied the Collider exhibition. So we got loads of scientists involved, scientists from the University of Manchester and other universities, to come in and talk to visitors. And we also did some fun things. So we worked with the Royal Northern College of Ballet, some young students there, and they created a ballet dance for us where they simulated that they were protons colliding in the Large Hadron Collider. So it was quite playful, but it was all very, very visual. And we had a visitor who was visually impaired, and her partner came to see the exhibition, and they actually complained to the museum that it wasn't very accessible to her. So the exhibitions team came to me and said, you know, we've got this lady and her partner. They are really interested in Collider, but it wasn't very accessible to them. Is there anything that you could do? So I phoned one of the scientists, Rob, from the University of Manchester, asked him to come over and bring some things, some tactile objects that we could use to talk about Collider. And I'd been working with Rob anyway because I had an upcoming exhibition about 3D printing. So he'd already been 3D printing some items for me. So that was like our starting point. And he just grabbed some other things that he could find around the lab. And the two of us walked around the exhibition with them, describing it, and had a sit down with them. And they just asked us a load of questions. And they sort of played with and felt all this stuff that Rob had brought. And they had such a good experience. And one of the main things about it was actually talking to a scientist and being able to actually ask the questions to one of the scientists that's working on the Large Hadron Collider. After we'd done that session with them, Rob and I were like, you know what, we're onto something here. Particle physics is so visual, but it doesn't have to be. And that's really what sowed the seeds for Tactile Collider.
Chris Edmonds from the University of Liverpool and the Cockcroft Institute is part of the team who've been looking at making the exhibition more accessible. But Chris, you know, tell me first of all a little bit more about the collider itself.
So the collider is a ring of magnets. It is 27 kilometres in circumference, and it accelerates these protons at close to the speed of light. In fact, they're going so quickly that in 1 second they could travel around the Earth 8 times, okay? Once we get the particles up to the energy, or this kind of energy, we basically smash them together. They break apart and we learn about the origins of the universe and what we're made up of.
And what do you hope to learn from the collider? That's probably a big question, because I'm sure there's discoveries happening all the time. But was there kind of overarching necessity for this?
Well, particle physicists describe the universe by what we call the standard model. And that's a picture of all the particles that we know about that make up the universe. And theoretical physicists, they kind of have ideas about particles that they think exist. So there was a particle called the Higgs boson, which people thought was how particles got mass. But we'd never actually seen this particle. So one of the reasons why the Large Hadron Collider was made was so that we could try and smash the protons together with enough energy that we'd be able to find this particle that we thought existed, but that we never really knew if it did. And we found it. So it was a brilliant achievement to find this new particle to solve a bit more of the puzzle about what the universe is made of, and to show that actually our theories are correct. We postulated that it was there and then we found it. So we understand a little bit more about the universe and how it's made and how it's created.
How do you go about making something like this accessible? Because it sounds a very visual project.
What we wanted to do is start again from the beginning in terms of communicating science. We are experienced in creating learning experiences for people who don't necessarily have a lot of experience with science. But the way in which this works normally is to use visualizations really quite heavily. This is the first time that people have tried to create this kind of event without using those visualizations. We use a lot of touch. We use a lot of audio. We wanted to create something that was really quite immersive, but also something that reflects the different approaches that people like to take when learning. We met up with a number of people who were visually impaired to try and get an idea as to how they wanted to learn such materials. We went to museums, we went to schools, we invited people to the lab too. And we saw that a great range of different approaches. We met people who would like to throw their hands all over an item just to kind of understand what it was, and other people who were really much more conservative, but really preferred the audio aspect, who like to put on a pair of headphones and be immersed in some sort of audio environment. We're looking to combine these two together as part of the tactile event. So we'll have a number of different methods for exploring one concept, just to give people as many opportunities as possible to really understand something.
So if someone came along to the exhibition, Chris, didn't know anything about the collider, perhaps didn't have a great understanding of the science behind it, what kind of things would they expect to hear or get their hands on?
So this is exactly the kind of audience that we're wanting to appeal to. And what we've designed is something that takes them through the physics of the Large Hadron Collider. So someone will sit down and they'll have an introduction to particles. They'll move on to a station on magnets, the magnets that used to steer these particle beams. Then they'll go on to an acceleration station. And finally, they'll learn about the Higgs boson.
Do people come out the other end knowing a little bit more?
Certainly. When people come out at the end of the experience, they seem to know much more about particle accelerators and particle physics in general. We really wanted to create something that was not just accessible, but also welcoming. We wanted people to feel part of this community. And from the feedback we've had, I think we've done this.
Are there plans to grow this or take this on tour further?
Definitely. So at the moment, we have a tour that's underway. We've visited a few schools around the Northwest. We'll be going down to Hereford, where we have our first really large event. Going forward from that, we're in Glasgow and Edinburgh. And then also we're augmenting our existing festival activities. So places like Blue Dot will also have tactile collider type exhibits there.
And I suppose you would hope that people not just get a better understanding of the collider, but really perhaps spark a greater interest in science for them or maybe their children or their family as well.
Exactly. We want people to know that science is accessible. One of the things that's really kind of important or fundamental to this project is no one can actually see this stuff. The particles that we're talking about are many orders of magnitude smaller than anything that we can possibly see. And the visualizations we usually use to communicate the science are just one interpretation of the science. Using all these tactile and audio type methods, I mean, this is just as valid a method as anything else.
One thing that was quite striking for me is that, like, no visually impaired people are the same. So everybody likes to learn in different ways and different techniques. So by working with a wide variety of people to develop the project, we hope that we have kind of got something for everyone, and there's something that any visually impaired person can take out of it.
And if people would like to learn more about the Accessible Collider events and perhaps where they're going to be, is there a website or somewhere they can go for more information?
Absolutely. So if you want to learn more, go to www.tactilecollider.uk or follow us on Twitter.
Hugely exciting piece of work. To Chris Edmonds and Marika Navin, thanks to both of you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio. Sounds good, Alan. Thanks for that report this week.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Now, having no vision can be seen by some as being a barrier, but Kevin Greening refuses to let that be the case. I spoke to him to find out about his life as a blind person and to find out what he's been doing recently that might surprise one or two sighted folk out there.
I'm originally Irish. I came over here in 1981. I eloped. My family didn't like the person I was in a relationship with, and we eloped and got married on the Isle of Man and ended up in Manchester, got a place. She died in 2004. Now, I met my present wife, Alison, some years ago in a local club for the blind here in Middleton in Manchester, and we got married 4 years ago. That's me in a nutshell.
So, let me ask you, Kevin. First of all, thank you so much for being here. Tell me a bit about you and your vision. Have you always been blind? Did you lose your sight later in life? What happened?
Well, I have no vision at all. I lost my sight when I was 2 weeks old. I had a brain hemorrhage. The full terminology is a subarachnoid hemorrhage. It was caused by an aneurysm when I was 2 weeks old. My father was a GP and knew, of course, what was happening because in the 1950s, of course, if a child had a brain hemorrhage, it was usually fatal. But fortunately, or otherwise, mine wasn't. Of course, I got immediate treatment. I went into one of the schools for the blind when I was four, St. Mary's School for the Blind, Dublin. The interesting thing there was that boys in Ireland in those days went to the girls' school until they were eight. And then they transferred to the boys' school until they were 18. Now, my parents, especially my mother, when I was about 11, decided I wasn't thriving academically. And she removed me from the system, as it were, and got me into what we now refer to as mainstream, which was a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. I didn't work out very well for me because, unfortunately, at the time, there was no sort of support system in place for children who required, or young people even who required, specialist education. So the thing was, I went through the school system and, of course, then definitely didn't thrive academically. When I was 20, because it worked out that for professional reasons, my parents were able to get me into Trinity College in Dublin, where it was decided that I would study English, French and music and teach. Well, you see, Steve, the thing is, I may speak English, I may speak French and I may like music, but there's no way I'm going to teach it.
Yeah.
So I rebelled. I didn't do well academically because the one thing I wanted to study was law. And in those days, you didn't tell your parents what you were going to do. You sort of were told what you were going to do, and you adhered to it. It was basically a jump, and you say, how high? But I sort of one day forgot to jump. Ended up in what I like to call communications. In other words, as a telephonist in Ireland. But I always wanted to do law, and that never left me. Never left me at all. And in fact, back in the sort of 1960s and 1970s, as one of life's great insomniacs, I used to listen in the early hours of the morning to what I now know was the Open University. They used to have their programs on radio late at night. Of course, I knew about its existence, and I did some work over here in the community. You know, just some community work around the area, and was always interested in local issues, especially those with a legal bent. Last year, the year before, I sort of looked at the possibility of getting involved or investigating the Open University. Last year, I actually made contact with them, and I'm now very happily studying with the Open University and commenced a law degree.
That is fantastic, and you know, the ability to do that. I mean, you know, it's a lot of work. I can only imagine, not ever having done it, Kevin. I couldn't tell you, but you know, it sounds like a lot of work. So, I guess Braille was a big part of your life because you would have Braille, had to learn Braille, wouldn't you?
Without Braille, I couldn't have managed.
Hmm.
And even today, I use Braille, although not as much as I used to, because we have this wonderful system now called UEB, Unified English Braille, which I never learned. It's still legible, but it slows one down. I always You know, you've heard of Grade 1 Braille and Grade 2 Braille. I always sort of regard UEB as sort of like Grade 1.5. It's not what I want to be reading, but it's there, and I suspect it's there because of computer systems and getting, you know, Braille to be written through computers. I would have thought they could refine the computers so that the computer would work for the people, not the people having to work for the computer. Because one thing I don't want to do is to start relearning again. I started learning Braille when I was 4 years old. I'm now nearly 63, and I, you know, I'm a bit old to start learning Braille. I've had enough trying to study law without having to relearn Braille. But everything is available now in Braille and in audio in all formats. And one thing I have to say about the Open University, everything is extremely accessible. I use Braille for my own notes because I can use SEB for that. So, of course, I keep my Braille up in that way, and it's extremely important that if you've got Braille, you use it, because technology is wonderful. But technology has a habit of occasionally going wrong. And one of the greatest words or combination of words in the vocabulary at the moment, especially if you're dealing with technology, is that wonderful phrase, backup. You always have to have backup, otherwise you've lost everything. So Braille, even though I still use SEB and would always use SEB, at least it's backup, and it's very important. I often wonder, if Louis Braille hadn't been around, would we have been reading maybe Scott or Greenan or White or whoever? Braille is a kind of a word that has come into the language, and it's what we use all the time, and I would never be without it.
You're on the Open University course now. You're studying law. How long does that take?
It's actually, if you're sitting comfortably, it's a six-year course, because wow. The Open University is a part-time university. So normally where a person would study over 3 years, this is actually six. What they do is each year you do a different module. So I started the first module this year, just a couple of weeks ago, and all the modules in the Open University are given codes. So for example, I'm doing what they call now W101. Don't know where the W comes from, but that's what it is. So next year would be W102, and the following year would be W103, and so on. Each year, you're studying a specific module. But the thing is, the module that I'm doing is really an introduction to law. But believe you me, there is an awful lot of reading. And having to take in all that information is not easy. So it's very, very important to take notes. And having Braille at your fingertips, you always have access to those notes. And the good thing is, if you've got a machine like a, you know, one of the Braille notes, which I do have, your notes are always portable. The other advantage is that I use a Victor Stream, so I can access the module online. It is an online course, so there is a link to the DAISY files, so I can transfer those onto an SD card, which makes the actual module portable. So if I have to go somewhere, I can still be studying on a train or on a bus or even in an airplane. But let's not go there. I'd like to keep my feet on the ground.
Yes.
it's because, you see, we all have to be as good as the next person. And if you're blind, there's no reason to stop you being as good as the person ahead of you or behind you, because we all have potential. The Open University allows people, regardless of disability, to be able to use that potential. And the support you get is second to none. I would recommend anybody, if they got the opportunity to go into third level education and they didn't get the opportunity in their youth, to grab it and try it. Even if you fail, you've still tried. so many of us unemployed at the moment, as you know. If you can get into an opportunity like third level education, even though as they put it, in learning at a distance or distance learning, you still get your degree, you still get your accreditations, and who knows what prospects they can then offer, because the degrees are recognised nationwide, if not globally.
Kevin Greening there, talking about his life as a blind person. Some interesting points there about Braille and education. What do you think? Email us with your thoughts on the interviews you're hearing on the programme. Email theweeklyconnect@rnib.org.uk. Now, coming up, we'll get the very latest from RNIB's campaigns team and the various campaigns they are following around the UK. And we talk about another of our Society of the Weeks. This time, it's all about the Macular Society.
It's not difficult to donate a little to RNIB. In fact, it's as easy as treating yourself to the latest CD, digital device, or Amazon Echo. Raise money for RNIB whilst you shop at Amazon. Amazon Smile is a simple and automatic way for you to support RNIB every time you shop, at no cost to you. When you next sign in to Amazon, use the address www.smile.amazon.co.uk and nominate RNIB as your charity of choice. The webpage looks exactly like amazon.co.uk and it remembers all of your login details, order history, wish lists, wedding lists, etc. But importantly, RNIB will receive 0.5% of the net sale of most goods that you can buy on the site. It's that easy to donate. Tell your friends and family how simple it is to donate to RNIB every time you shop on Amazon, simply by using www.smile.amazon.co.uk. Treat yourself on Amazon and support your favourite charity while you shop.
RNIB. Supporting people with sight loss.
Reading is essential to feeling included and independent, but when experiencing sight loss, gaining access to the same magazines and newspapers as your peers can be a challenge. RNIB Newsagent can remove those barriers. Whether you're interested in the daily papers, Reader's Digest or BBC Good Food, our service can deliver a wide range of popular titles in formats to suit you. Prices start from just £25 a year, and if you pay by direct debit, we'll give you a 20% discount. To find out more and request a copy of our new catalogue or sample magazine, please call RNIB's helpline on 0303 123 9999.
RNIB has a first-class idea to help people with sight loss. Don't throw away the stamps from your letters and parcels. Send them to RNIB. Last year, we raised much-needed money by recycling stamps. So, help us raise even more for people living with sight loss. Just collect your stamps and send them to RNIB Stamp Recycling, P.O. Box 185, Benfleet, SS7 9BH. Or visit rnib.org.uk for more information. Help RNIB improve the lives of people with sight loss and send us your stamps.
RNIB Talking Books provides more than 1 million audiobooks every year to people with sight loss and is now completely free for all blind and partially sighted people in the UK. The RNIB Library is the largest of its kind in Europe and offers a wide range of fiction and non-fiction titles, which readers can access on CD, on USB, or as a digital download. The RNIB Library also caters for adults and children in both Braille and giant print, so that you can listen how you choose, whether at home or on the go. To find out more about the RNIB Library or to sign up for your free membership, call the RNIB helpline on 0303 123 9999 or visit www.rnib.org.uk/library.
After years of campaigning, it's here. Live in England?
Thanks to NHS England's Accessible Information Standard, all information you receive from health and adult social care providers now has to be available in a format you can read. This means that all of those appointment letters, leaflets, letters about treatment and conditions, as well as information to do with your medication and prescriptions, now have to be available in your preferred format. RNIB is encouraging everyone to let their GP know of their preferred format, whether large print, audio, braille, or email, so that it's flagged on people's records and shared with other departments and specialists to ensure you get information in your format. For more information and to find out how you can let your GP know which format you'd prefer to hear from them in, visit rnib.org.uk/needittoreadit or call the campaigns team on 0207 391 2123.
In Your Pocket, RNIB's newsagent and talking books library delivered to your pocket now allows you to make phone calls. Reading can make a world of difference to your enjoyment of life, which is why we're excited to launch a new version of In Your Pocket, a portable device brought to you by RNIB, RealSam and O2, designed to make reading the latest newspapers, magazines, books and podcasts easier. In Your Pocket now also helps you to stay in touch with friends and family with its new phone call features, all using spoken commands. You can listen at home, in the park, on the train, or anywhere there is O2 coverage. And now with unlimited UK phone calls, a subscription to RNIB newsagent, access to talking books and magazines, In Your Pocket is an unbeatable package at just £20 per month for 24 months, or a one-off payment of £480. To find out more, please visit inyourpocket.net or call our dedicated helpline on 0333 772 7708.
Hello, Lynn Morgan here. Join me for the Welsh Connection every fortnight on Wednesday at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 4 p.m. when I'll be finding out what's going on in and around Wales here on RNIB Connect Radio.
The Weekly Connect on RNIB Connect Radio.
Welcome back. Now let's get up to date now with the latest campaigns news from RNIB. Here's Alan Russell.
It's time once again for our regular monthly catch-up with RNIB campaigns to find out what the big topics are at the moment. What is the UK's leading sightless charity involved in helping make everyday lives better for people with visual impairments? And also how you can get involved as a volunteer campaigner. Perhaps you're visually impaired yourself or know someone who is and has issues. You know, it could be anything from welfare payments to street clutter. There's all sorts of ways you can get involved and help RNIB's campaigns team, and indeed get help from the campaigns team as well. Joining me as always, we have with us Jessica Hall.
Hello, how are you?
Not bad. Have you survived all the weather?
Yes, made it through the snow.
It's a thing of the past, fingers crossed anyway. Now we've got three topics we're going to be discussing today, Jess, and the first couple are around welfare payments. So let's dive straight in with PIP, or Personal Independence Payments.
Yeah, Personal Independence Payments, or PIP, is a crucial benefit for many blind and partially sighted people, helping to meet some of the extra costs of living with a disability. But the process of applying for and being awarded PIP isn't working for many blind and partially sighted people. Inappropriate assessments and poor decision making is leading to people being refused PIP, leaving them distressed and worse off. PIP assessors often don't understand sight loss and its impact on people's daily lives, and some are even conducting eye tests, overriding evidence from NHS ophthalmologists. As well as problematic assessments, poor decision making by the Department for Work and Pensions, the DWP, is also resulting in people being offered a lower level of PIP or being refused altogether. And we've decided that enough is enough. And so we're calling on the Department of Work and Pensions to do two important things. Firstly, to ensure that the PIP assessment and decision-making processes are fair for blind and partially sighted people. And secondly, to make the PIP assessment process accessible for blind and partially sighted people, taking into consideration their individual needs. We want the PIP process to be fair for blind and partially sighted people, and you can be part of making that happen. You can join us by asking your MP to write to the Secretary of State for Work and Pensions, Esther McVeigh, to make sure that blind and partially sighted people get the payments that they're entitled to. It's quick and easy to do and can make a real difference. All you need to do is visit www.rnib.org.uk/actonpip. where you'll find our online action, which includes a template letter for your MP. And you can also follow the conversation about this important issue on Twitter and Facebook using the hashtag DWPWeNeedToTalk.
It is, as you say, Jess, a real hot topic at the moment. In a recent RNIB Connect show, I was actually chatting with Stephen Scott, the presenter, and David Allwinkle from RNIB. We're all discussing our own experiences of PIP, and there were, you know, some very stark differences, and it really highlighted some of the issues, as you mentioned, Jess, you know, people who are registered blind being turned down when that is completely wrong, you know, without even an eye test, really. So, yeah, let's hope people do get in touch with any problems, and indeed get in touch to help with that letter and press their MPs into action as well. We are going to stay with social security payments for our next piece, but this is more around devolved benefits.
Yeah, our Scottish listeners may know that Scottish Parliament is in the process of forming a new social security bill, which will see many welfare benefits come under devolved powers. RNIB Scotland have been following the process closely and working on amendments to what will become the Social Security Scotland Bill. And to ensure that the bill reflects the needs of blind and partially sighted people, they've been holding discussion groups covering a wide range of topics, including people's experiences of assessments, applying for assistance, and what the new social security system in Scotland should be like. This has fed directly into RNIB's consultation response and evidence that was given to members of Scottish Parliament, and specifically calling for amendments that would ensure that individuals receive information and documents in an accessible format, such as Braille, large print and audio. And after being lodged by Mark Griffin, MSP, the amendment was passed 5-4 by the Social Security Committee in February, gaining support from 3 out of 4 political parties on the committee. The amendment will now go to stage 3 of the bill process, and if it passes, it will ensure that the system is accessible to all, and we'll keep you updated on progress. And you can find out more about day-to-day campaign activity in Scotland by visiting their Facebook page if you go to facebook.com/rnib.scotland.
Interesting you talk about the different panels and committees there, Jess. I take part in one of the user group panels and testing panels as well. We've been kind of involved since the very start with this. Importantly for me being on that was because PIP will be one of the devolved payments as well. We will have regular features with Jean Freeman, MSP, who is behind the social security changes as well. Now, Jess will give us some details later if you want to get in touch with Campaigns Team for any information whatsoever. Even if you missed some of the details earlier, you can, of course, catch up. But what we're going to do now, Jess, is a little bit from yourself, and we're also going to hear from an RNIB campaigner.
Yes, there's been more campaigning success from one of our volunteer campaign coordinators, this time in the south of the country, in Worthing. Brian Butcher has been blind since birth, and following a career in business, has now put his skills and experience to the task of breaking down barriers for blind and partially sighted people. Brian turned his attention to the problem of street clutter on one of Worthing's busiest shopping streets.
The council announced in the local paper they were going to trial a licensing scheme to reduce the amount of street clutter. I approached the council to say, could we work with you to help you make this happen? Because as we all know, anyone with a sight issue, that street clutter is pretty difficult. Now, unfortunately, it was met with a lot of negativity because the council were going to charge for the implementation of this scheme because it costs money to license and enforce it. I put a proposal to the council to say, why don't we hold a Swap With Me event with the business owners who have the street furniture on the street and the council members, just so that everybody can experience what it is like for blind people walking along a street with a lot of clutter on it. most of the executive members and the leader from the council turn up, and lots of the businesses turn up. And we pop some SIM specs on them and just very simply ask them and help them walk up and down the street to experience what it was like. And having done the Swap With Me event, the council pretty much were very determined to make the licensing trial a success.
As we heard there from Brian, getting people to experience walking down the street with SIM specs is a really powerful way to help someone understand the challenges blind and partially sighted people face. Here's just one of the reactions that Brian got on the day.
One of the stories that really made it for me was one of the local business owners who actually had three A-boards out on the street said to me, I get it now. I didn't realise beforehand. I get why this is so difficult for you. I'm going to go back and take mine off the street. And he went back and took them off there and then. So talking to people and getting people to experience what it is like for blind and partially sighted people to move about on cluttered street is incredibly powerful. And we've really got to focus on the why. Not the money. Why were we chasing this issue in the first place, and why was it such an issue in the first place? The council thought it was so powerful and so worthwhile. We are going to be working hand in hand with the local council when they roll the licensing scheme out to the rest of Worthing. And very simply put, that means that we will hold that event each time each area is proposed to be licensed for their street furniture. One, that will make it much easier for the council to implement the scheme. And secondly, people will really understand why this is so important.
Some fantastic work by Brian in not only challenging street clutter, but transforming the understanding of business owners to make the streets of Worthing more accessible. There's more work to do, and we look forward to hearing how things progress. If, like Brian, you've been experiencing problems with street clutter in your local area and you'd like local businesses to really understand, how about starting your own campaign? Here's Brian with some reflections on his experience as a volunteer campaign coordinator.
If you're listening to this and you're thinking about volunteering for the RNIB and you're experiencing similar issues in your local neighbourhood, then do it. It proves to me that even if you have got sight impairment and a bit of hearing loss, you can still achieve many, many things. It's also very rewarding because it helps other people as well. You have to be persistent. You have to keep going. The RNIB will give you all the support you need, and they've been brilliant with me. So if you're going to do it, good luck.
Well done indeed to Brian. And I think, Jess, it really shows that a little bit of patience, some determination can really make a big difference. You know, and he got lots of people involved as well. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's encouraging more visually impaired people, blind or partially sighted, to kind of stand up and say, you know, we're not happy about this. And you don't have to be an expert campaigner. You can start at the very beginning, you know, looking for help and support. And there's plenty of that which you can get from RNIB.
That's right. As always, if you would like to get involved with campaigning to make your local area more accessible, or you're coming across some other kind of challenge, we've got lots of great resources online for you. If you go to www.rnib.org.uk/campaigns, you'll find all sorts of resources and news about what's going on with campaigning. Or you can get in touch with your local regional campaigns officer if you call our hotline on 020 7391 2123, or email us campaigns@rnib.org.uk.
Fantastic. Let's hope lots of people do just that, Jess, and we'll catch up with you again next month for more of the latest news from RNIB's campaigns teams. But in the meantime, thank you for speaking with us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Alan. Now, if you have a macular eye condition, you might feel that it is isolating at times. Well, the Macular Society is trying to create social events for people with macular conditions. And if you live in the northeast of Scotland, you'll be pleased to hear there's a new one happening near you soon. RNIB Connect Radio's Chris Wallace has been finding out more.
The Macular Society aim to provide information, advice and support about macular conditions. They have also been trying to establish localised support groups. There are currently only 4 support groups in the northeast of Scotland, but there is enthusiasm from a number of communities to create more. The person aiming to do this is Laura Gray, Regional Manager for the northeast of Scotland, who joins me on the line now. Laura, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Excellent. Now, before we get started, remind our listeners what the Macular Society hopes to do for people with macular conditions.
So
So we're there right across the UK to provide information, advice, support, practical help and emotional help to people with all kinds of macular conditions. Can be macular degeneration, but could be a range of other macular conditions.
And Laura, part of your role is to establish local support groups. In your region, where can people currently go for these groups?
So we have, I cover the northeast of Scotland. We currently have support groups in Aberdeen, in Dundee, in Perth, and a newly launched group in Stonehaven.
But you are hoping to set up more groups, aren't you?
Very much so.
And we're thinking about beginning with Arbroath.
We are. Arbroath is a community where I think there's interest and enthusiasm for a local support group. And so what I'm keen to do is just hold an event, test that out, encourage people to come. And if there's an appetite and if there's an interest, let's get a support group there.
And you have actually already set up an informal event, which is coming up at the end of March. Tell us what's going to happen at that event.
On the 28th of March at Arbroath Library, we're having an open event, an opportunity for people to come. It's over a two-hour period from 10:30 to 12:30 in the morning. And it just gives people a chance to come and find out a little bit more. What is the Macular Society? What do they do? What is this condition? What is macular degeneration? And what are macular conditions? What's the impact? But actually, most importantly, what can we do to help people? What support is out there? What advice is out there? And actually, is there an opportunity to meet other people who may be suffering from a similar condition to the one that you might be suffering from? People can get very isolated and lonely. They can think that it's just them, that there's nobody else out there who's going through what they're going through. And a lot of the things that they used to enjoy doing become much more difficult. So people can be quite lonely and often quite anxious about what's happening to them. And the support groups are a great way of just meeting up and finding out more about and a social opportunity as well. So that's the plan for the open event. Come along, everybody's welcome, and let's just see where we go from there.
There may be a lot of listeners in the Arbroath area who are thinking, you know, this sounds like a great idea, and once it's up and running, I may pop along some point in the next couple of months. How important is it for people to come to this initial informal event in Arbroath?
Well, it's important if people can get along, and I realise not everybody will be able to do so, but if they can, then I can make sure that we keep in touch as things develop, as we decide. What's the best day to meet? Where might we meet? What's the best way of getting in touch with local people? What would work best for that community? So it's good to come. It's good to have some input to that conversation. And it means that I can get back to them and keep in touch directly. If people can't come, I'll continue to use all the channels that I possibly can through the town and through the community to let people know what's happening. But even if people can't come for the whole event, to come along for a little while would be good.
It's great that you're getting these support groups established, Laura. As we mentioned before, you've currently got four support groups set up in the northeast of Scotland. How positive a reaction have you been having for these groups?
They're very positive. Some of them are quite new. Some of them have been in place for a long time. But they do provide an opportunity for people to come together. Support groups are not for everyone. The Macular Society offers a lot of other ways of keeping in touch with people. But for people who can get to a support group, they get a lot of benefit from it. Many people have made new friends. Many people have had the opportunity to talk about things that they might not always want to talk about to their family, things that are happening to them, things they're experiencing. And I've heard so many times people say, oh, I get that. I never knew anybody else get that, but that's what happens to me. And that's really rewarding for people. And people have learned a lot as well. We have so many leaflets, we have so much information available, we have speakers from local organisations, we have practical help, the opportunity for people to find out more about the devices and the gadgets that's out there to help. We have people who can come and help with IT or phones or computers or anything really that the group decides that they would like to know about and find helpful.
It's absolutely fantastic. And as we mentioned before, Laura, the Macular Society is a UK-wide society. If any of our listeners who are out with the northeast of Scotland are listening and want to find out more about the Macular Society or find out if there are maybe groups near them that they might not even know about, where can they go for more information?
The Macular Society has a helpline, fantastic helpline. Anybody can phone, lovely people, and they can answer any question about anything at all. And they will immediately be able to tell you what there is in your local area. I can give you the number for the helpline. It's 0300 30 30 111. And whether it's a question, information, anything at all, they're there. That's what they're there for. And they have all that information at their fingertips.
And is there a way for our listeners across the United Kingdom to encourage other regional managers, such as yourself, to establish support groups near them?
Absolutely. I mean, we've got 380 support groups at the moment. So there's loads of support groups out there. But there's still lots of areas that we'd love to have more groups in. And again, through that helpline, you can be put in touch with the regional managers in your part of the country. And we're desperately keen to have volunteers come forward to help us run the groups. And we depend on a large, fantastic cohort of volunteers who work with us. And we'd love to add to that and to build to that. And we'd love to have more support groups in place.
And speaking of which, of course, Laura, for residents in the Arbroath area, remind us one more time when and where the upcoming event is taking place.
So the event is on Wednesday, the 28th of March. It's from 10:30 to 12:30, and it's at Arbroath Library, which is in Hill Terrace in Arbroath. And everyone is welcome, whether you have a macular condition, whether you're a friend, a family member, a carer, you're very, very welcome to come along. It's very informal. And it's going to be a very friendly event.
It sounds fantastic, Laura, and I wish you all the very best of luck. Laura Gray, Macular Society's Regional Manager for the North East of Scotland, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Chris Wallace there from RNIB talking to Laura Gray from the Macula Society. Well, that is almost it for us. Remember, you can always check out our podcast, and we've updated it recently, actually. You might notice a bit of a difference there. It's now called the RNIB Connect podcast. You'll find it on iTunes and Audioboom, and you've got all the usual things in there, including the Weekly Connect, of course, but lots more, and lots more news about the RNIB Connect community, lots more audio to listen to. It's really worth a check out. So go to RNIB Connect. You'll find that on the iTunes store, and you'll also find it on the Audioboom channels as well, and you can get lots of other podcasts from RNIB there as well. More to come on that next week on the programme, but for now, thank you for listening, and remember, when it's Monday at 1, it's the Weekly Connect. Goodbye.